Today we're going to discuss the Perushim and the Tzidukim, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So where we last left off was Shimon, the last of the Maccabean brothers. So Shimon and his two sons were killed by Shimon's son-in-law in 134 BCE, and the remaining son, Yochanan Hyrcanus, or John Hyrcanus, became the Jewish leader. Now, during the reign of John Hyrcanus, the Seleucid Empire essentially fell apart. Rome began to cast its shadow over political developments. So the slowly but surely they got stronger. And as mentioned, the Seleucid Empire was weakened considerably. Soon after John Hyrcanus came to power, he faced an invasion by the latest Antiochus, who raised, Antiochus VII, he raised a large army to recover parts of the territory of Eretz Yisrael that Shimon had conquered. And this war lasted for about 2 years. It was long and hard. Eventually, an agreement was reached, and John Hyrcanus was recognized as the ruler of Judea proper, while he agreed to pay tribute for the cities that the Hashmonaim had conquered outside the Judean borders. In other words, Judea was sort of the center of Eretz Yisrael, and then you had Samaria, or the Shomron, northern Israel, and then you had Idumea, Edom, southern Israel. So any area that was, let's say, outside Judea proper, he paid some taxes to Antiochus, and he also agreed to provide military aid to Antiochus in his campaign against the Parthians. However, Antiochus was defeated by the Parthians in 129 BCE, and eventually the entire Seleucid kingdom collapsed, and Judea resumed its independence. John Hyrcanus believed that the entire part of Eretz Yisrael was the ancestral heritage of the Jewish nation, so there was no room for any foreign worship, idol worship. He wanted to restore the Davidic kingdom. He destroyed the Samaritan temple on Har Gerizim. And what's very significant is that he forcibly converted the Idumeans in the south. Now, the conversion of the Idumeans was the first of its kind. As Jews, we do not believe in forcibly converting the rest of the world. Whereas, perhaps throughout history, we've seen how Christians forcibly converted other people, including Jews. We've seen how Muslims have forcibly converted other people, including Jews. Jews do not forcibly convert anyone. And Yochanan Hyrcanus, John Hyrcanus, was an exception to the rule when he forcibly converted the Idumeans. And in fact, the Idumeans soon became an inseparable part of the Jewish nation, and their upper classes began to occupy important positions in the government and society of the Hasmonean kingdom. John Hyrcanus engaged in tremendous territorial expansion. He conquered almost all of Eretz Yisrael. He even conquered some territory on the eastern side of the Jordan River. During this time, Demetrius II, the other would-be Seleucid ruler, began to interfere with Egyptian politics. So John Hyrcanus sided or allied himself with the Ptolemies, with the Egyptians. At the time of John Hyrcanus' death in 104 BCE, the Jews were expanding their borders everywhere in Eretz Yisrael. And during this time, during the reign of John Hyrcanus, and shortly before actually, and really starting from after the story of Hanukkah in 164 BCE, two groups emerged, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the Perushim and the Tzidukim. There was a tremendous zeal and intensity for the freedom of religion following the story of Hanukkah, and this aroused a corresponding zeal and intensity for the Torah, pushing the Jewish people more deeply into a Torah centered religion. The Hashmonai leaders relied on the Gerusia as advisors, which was a shaky coalition of the Perushim and the Tzidukim. And they were different. They had different ideologies. The Pharisees, or the Perushim derived their name, as I mentioned, from the Hebrew word Perushim, probably referring to the separation from ritually impure food and from tables of the common people of the Amei Haaretz, who were not scrupulous regarding the laws of Tuma and Tahara and the laws of Maisros. Now, by and large, the Perushim had three major characteristics. They were primarily represented by the middle and lower classes. They really were not that Hellenized. Generally speaking, those who belonged to the upper classes tended to be more Hellenized. The Pharisees were more from the middle and lower classes, and therefore they were not Hellenized. They accepted what they term the tradition of their fathers, the Minhag Avosenu, which were non-biblical laws and customs said to have been passed down through the generations. And their teachings supplement the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, and they were a part of what Chazal would later call Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law. They accepted the notion of the immortality of the soul, reward and punishment after death, and divine providence. And this is something that the Tzidukim denied. In fact, in some of the commentaries of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, the third Mishnah of the first chapter in Pirkei Avos, we read about an individual named Antignos Ish Socho. And Antignos from Socho said, Al tiyu kavodim hamshamshim esarav al manas lekabel pras, ela havu kavodim hamshamshim esarav shelo al manas lekabel pras. That you should be someone who serves Hashem, not in order to receive a reward, but you should serve Hashem, not to receive a reward, just serve Hashem, because it's the right thing to do, because Hashem commanded us to do that. Don't serve Hashem in order to receive reward. And some of the Mefarshim on this Mishnah claim that Antignos had two students, Sadok and Baitos, and they were the forerunners to the Tzidukim and the Baitosim, who were two groups who did not believe in the afterlife, in reward and punishment, because they misunderstood what Antignos said. All Antignos said was that you shouldn't serve God in order to receive reward. And they understood him to believe that why shouldn't we serve God in order to receive reward? Because there is no reward and punishment. There's no reward and punishment. What happens in this earth happens on this earth. There's no immortality of the soul. There's no divine reward and punishment. That's not what Antignos said. Antignos simply said that that shouldn't be our motivation to serve Hashem. But they misinterpreted it. In any case, that's one version or one interpretation or explanation behind the Tzidukim, who do not believe in the immortality of the soul and reward and punishment and divine providence. The name of the Pharisees of the Perushim first appear in the books of Josephus by name during the reign of Yonatan Jonathan around the year 150 BCE. Again, story of Chanukah is in 164 BCE. Yehuda Maccabee dies about 4 years later. That's the strongest, most popular of Matisyahu's five sons. The next son to take over was Yonatan. And again, during his leadership, so that's when we find the name of the Pharisees. They considered themselves traditional followers of Ezra HaSofer, and they represent the social attitudes of the vast majority of the Jewish people. And the Josephus loves them. In Josephus's writings, in his historical works, he writes that the Pharisees are friendly to one another. They are for the exercise of concord and regard for the public, but the behavior of the Sadducees one towards another is in some degree wild, and their conversation with those that are of their own party is as barbarous as if they were strangers to them. In other words, not only were they different in their ideology, but also the Pharisees were much nicer to each other than the Sadducees. The Sadducees, the Tzidukim, were predominantly an aristocratic group. Most of them were Kohanim, or those who married Kohanim. They tended to be moderate Hellenizers whose primary loyalty was to Judaism, but whose culture was greatly influenced by the environment in which they lived. They derived their name, again, there were some commentaries in this Mishnah Avos that I mentioned that said that there was someone named Tzadok who was the leader of this group. Others say that they derived their name from Tzadok, the Kohen Gadol, in the times of Shlomo HaMelech. They reject Minhag Avosenu, the tradition of our fathers, which the Pharisees considered as law, and therefore later rabbinic sources picture them as rejecting Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, after the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, there was a document which was found which listed 22 areas of legal disagreement and argument that the Siddukim had different methods of biblical exegesis than the Pharisees and the Perushim. It's not that they rejected any form of biblical interpretation. They just had different forms of biblical interpretation than the Pharisees. And just as an example, in Mishnah Yadayim, in Maseches Yadayim, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Vav, so there the Mishnah tells us, Omrim Tzidokim Kovlim An Anu Aleichem Perushim She'atem Omrim Kisvei HaKodesh Metavei Yadayim V'Sifrei Homeris Eino Metavei Yadayim. So the Tzidokim say, we have a claim against you, O Pharisees, that you say, Kisvei HaKodesh, make the hands impure, and the books of Homer are not impure. How can that be? The Holy Scriptures, they're holy. How come they make the hands pure and the books of Homer do not make the hands pure? So in fact, they have a taina, and the Pharisees answer. And by the way, they answer that Kisvei HaKodesh lefi chibasam hi tumasa, because we love Kisvei HaKodesh, so therefore they make the hands tame. The reason why the Chazal made a rule that Kisvei HaKodesh are tame is because Kisvei HaKodesh were holy, and true, and there were holy scriptures. Truma is holy food, so very often people would put the holy stuff all together. They put the truma next to the Kisvei HaKodesh, and then when the mice would come, and it wasn't so hygienic back then, when the mice would come and eat the truma, they'd also eat the holy scriptures, which certainly wasn't far from appropriate. And therefore, in order to separate, people wouldn't put the Kisvei HaKodesh together with the truma, they said Kisvei HaKodesh are metame, they can make things impure, and therefore people then would separate and would not store the Kisvei HaKodesh together with the Truma. But in any case, there's an example where the Tzidokim had claims on the Perushim on their rules of Tuma and Tahara. They also had a claim in Mishnah Zayin where they said, we have a claim against you that Shatem Batarim Es HaNitzok, there was a debate whether a liquid stream that was poured from a tahor vessel into a tame vessel that connected the two vessels, would that make the upper one impure? And the Tzidokim actually said, yes, it would make the upper one impure. And the Perushim disagreed. And again, the Tzidokim did not accept the device of the Eruv to permit carrying in a common alleyway. Those who do Daf Yomi may remember in Maseches Erev, Perek Vav, Mishnah Beis, where Rabbi Gamliel says that Maisi b'tzidoki echad sheyadorim on b'mavav Yerushalayim, that there was a tzidoki who was living with the people in an alleyway in Yerushalayim, and he apparently did not buy into the Eruv, and it was a problem. And so the question was, how would they deal with that? So there was the Mishnah in Makos, for example, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav, cites a debate between the Pharisees, the Perushim and the Tzidukim, between the Pharisees and the Sadducees regarding when someone could be convicted of being an Eid Zomein, of being a false witness, so that he gets the same punishment as that he tried to have the other person punished. And based on the Tzidukis' understanding, is that they would only be killed, the Eid Zomein would only be killed, if they were successful in having someone being killed based on their testimony. Only if they actually someone was killed, however, for attempted murder, they would not be killed for being Eid Zomim. And the Perushim disagreed based on their interpretation. They said the only time an Eid Zomim could be killed is between Gemar Din, the verdict, and death. So there are different methods of interpretation. There's the Mishnah Nida, Perek Gal, Mishnah Beis, which seem to indicate that that Tzidokim had different laws of Taras HaMishpacha. And they had different views of halacha, but the Tzidokim definitely rejected immortality of the soul, reward and punishment, and divine providence. There sometimes people get mixed up, the Tzidokim mixed up with the Baitusim. Perhaps the most famous debate between, let's say, Chazal, the Perushim of the times of the Chazal, times of the Mishnah, and this other group, is actually not with the debate with the Tzidokim, it's with the Baitusim regarding the date of Shavuos, or when you start counting the 50 days. The Torah says you start counting 50 days, Mimacharas HaShabbos, the day after the Shabbos. So the Perushim understand it to mean that the Shabbos there refers to the first day of Pesach, the first day of Yom Tov, that you count 50 days starting from the second day of Pesach, and the 50th day is Shavuos. However, that's the Baitusim believe that, no, you start Mimachos HaShabbos, the first Shabbos after Pesach, or the first Sunday after Pesach. That's when you start counting 50 days. And Megillas Tainis describes this debate, and the Gemara in Menachos describes this debate. But that was actually not with the Tzidokim, but that was with the Baitusim, and they were similar. They had similar views to the Tzidokim. Now, at the outset of the career, at the outset, of the Hasmonean dynasty, so they were under the influence of the Pharisees. They were under the influence of the Perushim, because again, these were the leaders who believed in the. These were the leaders of the Chanukah revolt who were willing to die rather than become Hellenized. So they were anything but Hellenized Jews. They believed in the superiority of the halachic of the Torah culture, which was transmitted from Rebbe to student all the way back from Ezra HaSofer. And so again, initially the Pharisees, the Perushim, were natural allies with the Hasmonean leaders. However, during the reign of John Hyrcanus, Yochanan Hyrcanus, a breach occurred between the Hasmoneans, between the Hasmonaim and the Pharisees, which widened during the days of his son. Now, there's actually a story which is told in Josephus, and it's also told in the Gemara and Kiddushin, but there are two different versions as to the story. So let's first read the version in Josephus from his Antiquities, Book 13, Chapter 10. And there, Josephus writes that Hyrcanus was a disciple of the Pharisees and greatly beloved by them. And when he once invited them to a feast and entertained them very kindly, when he saw them in good humor, he began to say to them that they might know that he was desirous to be a righteous man, to do all things whereby he might please God, which was the profession of the Pharisees also. However, he desired that if they observed him offending in any point and going out of the right way, they would call him back and correct him. In other words, he told them, give me tochacha, give me musar, if I ever go off the straight and narrow. On which occasion they attested to his being entirely virtuous. No, all the Pharisees said to John Hyrcanus, you are a righteous individual. And he was very happy with himself. But still there was one of his guests there whose name was Elazar, a man of ill temper and delighting in seditious practices. There was a bad guy named Elazar. And he said, since thou desirest to know the truth, if thou wilt be righteous and earnest, lay down the high priesthood and content thyself with the civil government of the people. And there was this man, Elazar, who said, or Eliezer, who said, you are king, but you should not be the Kohen Gadol anymore. You're the leader. That's fine. You can remain the leader, but do not be the Kohen Gadol anymore. And when he desired to know for what cause he ought to lay down the high priesthood, and when Yochanan Hyrcanus said, why should I not be Kohen Gadol anymore? The other replied, we have heard it from old men that thy mother had been a captive under the reign of Antiochus Epiphanes. Notice he heard that Yochanan Hyrcanus' mother was a captive during the reign of Antiochus from the story of Hanukkah. And if she was a captive, she probably had relations with some Syrian officers. And then it was not appropriate for her children to be called Kohanim, certainly Kohanim Gedolim. And it turned out this story was false, and John Hyrcanus was provoked against him, and all the Pharisees had a very great indignation against him. Okay, so this guy Elazar started to spread a bad rumor that wasn't substantiated. Now, Josephus continues and he writes, now there was one Jonathan, a very great friend of Hyrcanus's, but of the sect of the Sadducees, whose notions are quite contrary to those of the Pharisees. He told Hyrcanus that Elazar had cast such a reproach upon him, according to the common sentiments of all the Pharisees, and that this would be made manifest if he would but ask them the question, what punishment they thought this man deserved. So Jonathan says, you know, John Hyrcanus, king, leader, Eleazar had done such a horrible thing as spread this horrible rumor that they should ask the Pharisees what punishment this man should deserve. And the Pharisees made an answer, he deserves stripes and bonds, but that it did not seem right to punish the reproaches with death. So the Pharisees said, give him malchus, give him lashes, but don't kill him. And that, in general, they are, and Josephus writes, that even indeed the Pharisees, even upon other occasions, are not apt to be severe in punishments. In general, they don't believe in punishing that much, in severe punishments. At this gentle sentence, Hyrcanus was very angry and thought that this man reproached him by their approbation. In other words, John Hyrcanus basically thought that the Pharisees were just giving him a slap on the wrist. They really agreed with him because they didn't suggest a much stronger punishment. And Jonathan influenced him, and it was from that moment that he switched his alliance from the Pharisees to the Sadducees. And that is the story of how the switch began, according to Josephus. The Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Samach Vav and Aleph tells a slightly different story. Actually, it's a similar story, but it happens during the reign of Yanai HaMelech, the son of Yochanan Hyrcanus. And there, similar story, Yanai HaMelech comes back from waging war, the conquering kingdoms, and they all have there's a big feast. And the Gemara talks about how there is an Ish Leitz Lev Ra Ublial Velazar Ben Po'ira Shmo. There's a man, Elazar Ben Po'ira, similar to the Elazar of the Josephus story. And Vayomar Elazar Ben Po'ira Le'yanei HaMelech, Yanei HaMelech, Livam Shel Perushim Alecha. He says, the hearts of the Perushim are against you. Ma'aseh, Hakim Lohem B'tzitz Shebein Erecha. So Hekim will have a tzitz shebein erav. He put his tzitz between his eyes, and then Hoya Shem. Again, in the story of in Gemara and Kiddushin, Elazar ben Poira is not the one who suggests that the king should leave his to stop being the Kohen Gadol. He's the one. He's the Sadducee, as it were. He's the bad guy who turns Yadai HaMelech against the Chachamim, against the Pharisees. And there's a man by the name of Yehuda ben Gedidya who says to Yadai HaMelech, he says, enough, Ravloch Keser Malchus, Harach Keser Kehuda, Zahar Shel Aaron, just be a king, don't be a Kohen, a Kohen Gadol, because we were told, Imol Nishpes B'Modin, that your mother, that his mother was taken captive in Modin, and it turned out it wasn't true. And the king was very angry. And Elazar ben Poira said to Yadai HaMelech, Hedot Shemisrael kach hudino v'atah melech v'koi gadol kach hudincho. Imagine if someone had spread this kind of false rumor with a simple person. You know, this should be his din. This should be his halacha. This should be, you know, we have to, you're the king. We have to punish the people, because the people... This individual, Yehuda ben Gedidya, sort of represented the Pharisees, and they didn't, and they spoke out. He says that basically he represented them, and he got angry at all the Pharisees. And Yochanan Hyrcanus says, Ma'aseh, what should I do to them? So Elazar ben Poira said, Imata Shebela Tasi, you want to listen to my advice? Rome say, crush them. Ah, says Yadai HaMelech, for Torah Bati Aleha, what's going to be with Torah? Here krucha umunechas bekeren zavis, kol arotze lilbo yovo yobat. The Torah is wrapped in the quarter. You don't need these rabbis. We still have the Torah. It's written in a scroll. So essentially, the Gemara says that because of Elazar ben Poira, the king killed all the sages of Yisrael, and the world was desolate until Shimon Shetach came, the Hechzir Sator Liyoshna, and he restored the Torah to its older glory. So again, it was unfortunate that either during the reign of John Hyrcanus, or certainly during the reign of Yanai HaMelech, that the kingdom, the leadership, the Hasmonean leadership, became much more Hellenized, much more siding with the Tzidokim. And it was a real shame, because the Maccabees had risen not just to free the Jews from foreign domination, but to combat members of the Jewish population who sought to Hellenize themselves and their countrymen. And they revolted against the Seleucid Empire only when the latter sought to aid the Hellenizers by persecuting Judaism. By the end of the reign of Hyrcanus, and certainly during the reign of Yanni HaMelech, the Hasmonean leaders conducted their courts in Hellenistic fashion, and that is certainly not something that their ancestors would be happy with. We will see next time how after the reign of Yare HaMelech, so then during the reign of Shlomtzion HaMalka, the queen of the wife, and eventually the widow of Yare HaMelech, the tide turns back, and the Pharisees once again are the favored spiritual advisors to the Hasmonean dynasty.